Right. Well, key features last week, starting just with the data in the US, which is consistent with the US economy having seen a growth peak in the June quarter and just fading a little as we go into the third quarter. So we had a revision of Q2 GDP came out, and it was revised up slightly to 6.7% annualized from 6.6. But the GDP number doesn't really state what the true strength of the economy was back in the second quarter, because there was quite a big inventory adjustment running through there, a big fall in inventory, as many companies found that they couldn't hold on to their stocks, so they couldn't produce more. They were selling out of stocks. So GDP final sales were actually 7.9% annualized, so way stronger than the GDP number. And the leading edge of that was consumer spending, which was zipping along at 11.9% annualized growth. So those two numbers give you a better idea of just how phenomenally strong the US was going back through the second quarter. And it's repeated there in things like the weekly initial jobless claims. The most recent weekly jobless claims are 353,000. So that's consistent with a lot of strength still running through non-farm payrolls, which in any case, last couple of months, have been running over 900,000 a month. So, you know, we've got this underpinning of strength, and we saw it in a couple of the numbers that came out late last week too, where we had personal income, personal consumption spending. Personal income rose way more than expected in the month of July. It was up 1.1%, market expected 0.2% month on month. And personal consumption expenditure managed 0.3%. That was after an upwardly revised 1.1%. So still, you know, basically consolidating at a very, very strong level. And that was the sort of message that came out of the Jackson Hole Symposium when Jerome Powell spoke late last week. And his message was an interesting one, because you've got one or two of the leading indicators in the United States which are not quite as strong as they had been. And the main fear there is, again, COVID. The number of infections have picked up, and whether this will lead to restrictions and those sorts of things, undermining what otherwise is still a very, very strong story for the US economy. As far as Jerome Powell's concerned, the economy is picking up very nicely indeed. You've got crisis-level monetary support, and so he had to go around this thorny issue of, how do you start reducing this crisis-level monetary support? And he's put it into two stages. The first one is that to try and, again, debunk that, the inflation pickup that they're seeing in the United States, as far as the Fed's concerned, is still a temporary thing. They still think that the economy, even though it's doing very well at the moment, may have some setbacks where you still need the monetary support. So what he's saying basically is, well, we probably need to step back the bond buying program, and that will probably start later this year. But as far as record low interest rates are concerned, we're not touching those. And we'll read through inflation. We're not going to be touching those until we see full employment. So it's this message that we're going to try and ignore all this inflation that's coming through. The one bit that really matters, the interest rate settings, we're not going to be touching those. So this, in some ways, was a message of comfort to the markets, that even if you do start to get something of a taper running through the bond buying program as you get later this year, the Fed won't be touching the very low interest rates anytime in the very near future. So this dual message, which is going to be tested from time to time by inflation numbers when they come out. So this is going to add the volatility, I think, into the way in which we read the US. This week in the US, fair number of numbers coming out. Some of them reflect what happens when you have these very low interest rates. On Tuesday night, we've got the June Case-Shiller House Price Index coming out. The house prices in the United States, across the United States, are now lifting at round about 1.7, 1.8% per month. So if you went back to the previous month, May, on this, it takes a while for them to get these numbers together. The May one was up 1.8%, 17% year on year. It's expected that the June survey will show another 1.7% increase in house prices, and that will lift the year on year to 18.6% year on year. So if you want any reasons why the US is not going to slow down anytime soon, think in terms of income support. You've got jobs growing at 900,000 a month. You've got average hourly earnings now, which are lifting at 4% year on year. And you've got household wealth in the United States, where you've got the equity markets up over 30% year on year. And you've got house prices, which are up 18, well, after this week's number, will be up 18 going on 19% year on year. So that's a powerful amount of support. Before you get onto government spending support, running towards the household sector, which means that, yeah, you get the wobbles from time to time when it has a little bit of a fear about what may be happening with COVID-19. But it's always going to come back with these sorts of numbers. And as long as the Fed is on its current, we'll ignore inflation and we'll just keep these interest rates super low as well. So, this is still basically the story of the United States. And, we'll see some of that strength still in some of the numbers this week. Watching things like August Consumer Confidence, the Consumer Sentiment Survey from the University of Michigan had a bit of a big fall because of COVID for the month of August. Consumer Confidence one doesn't look quite as weak, so there's an expectation it'll come back to 124 from 129.1. You've got a few of the manufacturing PMIs coming out. There'll be a little bit of slippage in that, but nothing dramatic as we go through. And then we run through to the August non-farm payrolls, which come right at the end of this week. And the way they look, we'll have average hourly earnings, which were up 0.4%, 4% year-on-year, going back to the month of July. Looks as if there's going to be a repeat of that, another 0.4%, 4% year-on-year. And if we keep running at 0.4s a month, we're starting to drift that 4% upwards year on year as we go further down the track, heading towards nearer to 5%. Non-farm payrolls, it was up 943,000 going back the month before. We can't keep running them at quite as high as that. The market thinks around about 728,000. Still a very, very strong reading after back-to-back 900,000 pluses for the previous 2 months. And the unemployment rate, which clattered all the way down to 5.4% last month from 5.9% the month before, is expected to fall further to 5.2%. What I would say about that unemployment rate, still, if you went back before the pandemic set in the United States in the early part of 2020, the US was down to 3.5% for the unemployment rate. So it's still got a bit of room to move there. And this essentially is the Fed story that, we can run all the way down to full employment, which is in the low threes as far as the unemployment rate is concerned, before we think about touching interest rates. And what they're trying to say on the inflation front is what we're seeing with this temporary boost in inflation, it's all about very strong demand meeting supply-side constraints. But supply picks up, that will dissipate, providing you haven't got the ongoing support from an overly fully employed labour market. It just looks a little bit weird that the inflation that we're seeing running through the US does look pretty powerful at the moment. In terms of China, there was nothing really coming through of note last week. This week, we just run the usual turn-of-the-month purchasing managers' reports. That's both the official manufacturing purchasing managers' report, the services sector, both the month of August. And then later in the week, we get the private sector surveys that almost parallel those, the cakes in ones, and they're for both the manufacturing and services sector. In both cases, the manufacturing PMIs are just a touch above 50. The official one, 50.4, going back to July, and for the cakes in one, 50.3. They're both expected to edge back a little bit further for the current month, so probably to 50.2 for both of them. The services sector PMIs, which at their peaks were in the 55-ish territory. For the official one was back to 53.3 going back to July, and for the the cakes in one was still at 54.9. Those fading back a little bit too, but still, you know, looking, yeah, they're above the expansion contraction line, but they're not as robust as they have been. So just that settling back in terms of Chinese economic growth. Moving to Australia, and you know, last week we had some numbers came through which reflect partly still past strength, going back to the June quarter, and also the damage we've done since then in terms of lockdowns. We had July retail trade numbers. Going back to the past strength, you know, we had Q2 construction work done and Q2 private capital expenditure. Both of these were pretty firm. Construction work done didn't come back that much. In fact, it was up. It was up 0.8% after being up 2.4% in the first quarter. And private capital expenditure, it had a bolter going back to Q1 when we had a huge 6% increase in private capex. We actually went up another 4.4%. It was quite a bit above market expectation. We had building capital works up 4.6%. Plant and machinery was up 4.3%. Now, this is going to feed into the GDP number we get this week for Q2. So, there were some fears that maybe Q2 might have even slipped slightly into negative territory. It does look very unlikely on the numbers we've had so far. It looks as if we're going to get a positive GDP for Q2. Q3 is the problem, obviously, where we get a big pullback in Q3. But Q2 that comes out this week, and I'll get onto that in a minute, doesn't look too bad. The other part of the private capital expenditure survey are the business forecasts of what they expect to spend for 2020-21. I would have put money on this is now the third estimate, and the second one came out going back a quarter ago. I would have put money on the third estimate being a touch lower than the second estimate, given that we're already starting to move into the lockdowns when the survey was taken. It didn't. It went up, and way more than you normally expect between estimate 3 and estimate 2. So it went up 12.5% compared with estimate 2, and they're expecting to spend $127.7 billion. There's still this optimism running through the business sector, even with what we've had in terms of economic activity. Maybe it's the support payments that have come through from government and support income support. Maybe it's a shift in talk too that starting to look at vaccinations being the solution out of this rather than trying to get case numbers all the way back down to zero. These sorts of things may be just giving a little bit of hope there, but certainly the expectations on business investment spending are high. Having said that, we have done damage, obviously, with the lockdowns, and we saw that in July retail trade numbers. Back in June, the starts of the lockdown in New South Wales and one or two spot ones elsewhere, we had a fall in retail sales of 1.8%. We had another 2.7% fall in the month of July. So a little bit of softness starting to run through now in these numbers. And this is a story for when we get to looking at Q3 in terms of household consumption spending, a negative number on that and what it does to Q3 GDP. But that's quite a way down the track. The next GDP number that comes is this week, and it's for Q2. So it's pretty rearward looking. And before that, today and tomorrow, we get some contributors to that. So today we'll get things like inventories for the second quarter, company profits. Company profits, if anything, would have lifted by about 3% after being down 0.3% in the first quarter. We also get second quarter current account information. Current account's gone into bigger surplus, but there's a lot of price movement in that. So net export contribution, which was minus 0.6 percentage points going back to Q1, mostly because we had a big lift in imports running through. So that's one of the reasons why, in the volume of imports, which is why you get that negative contribution. If anything, that may have widened a bit to minus 0.9 percentage points for Q2, but it's offset against what we've seen for CapEx, and we had some real growth in retail trade through the course of the quarter. So all of those provide offsets to that. So Q2 GDP coming out on Wednesday, market consensus is it was up by 0.5% quarter on quarter. It's not as strong as the 1.8% going back to Q1, but that would lift the year-on-year in GDP growth from 1.1% to 9.2% year-on-year. Why that? Because going back to Q2 last year, we had a 7% fall in GDP in the quarter. So you've got a 7.5 percentage point swing factor running through the year-on-year. There's a few July numbers coming out this week as well. We've got home building approvals, which are still coming back. We had all sorts of incentives in there early on, which have fallen away. Home building approvals were down 6.7% month on month going back to June. They expect to fall further by another 5% in the month of July. We've got July housing finance. If anything, those have risen. So we had a small fall, minus 2.5% going back the month before. They're up over 90% year on year, but expecting to see a 1 to 2% lift in that for the month of July. And July international trade, still very, very strong in terms of the values. So looking at another record trade surplus of $10.8 billion, up from $10.5 billion for the month before. So broadly speaking, the Australian side, we've got some past strength, but obviously we're going the opposite way to the rest of the world in terms of our economic growth rate actually falling back through the third quarter. But with every hope that we can get some rebounds coming through the fourth quarter, as we start to get vaccination rates to the levels where things can change. The very, very worrying numbers, obviously, out of New South Wales in terms of infection rates, 1,200 odd just for the last 24 hours. The hospitalisation rate and the death rate is actually very, very low on those numbers. And this is the impact of vaccination. The daily death rate, it was one of the higher ones yesterday. It was 6. So not a high number relative to the infection rate. And the hospitalisation rate, there are about 900 people now in hospital in New South Wales with COVID. There's 140 odd in intensive care, but the system is well able to cope with that and a lot more. So that's the reason why it's sort of pushing towards saying you can open up with these numbers when you go a bit further down the track if you've got the high vaccination rate. Europe last week, we had the manufacturing PMI, services PMIs for August. They're holding up better in Europe than they are in the US now. Europe, if anything, is getting a real second wind in terms of economic growth. So the manufacturing PMI did come back to 61.5 from 62.8, but the US is already down through 60. It's in the high 50s for that similar sort of indicator. The services sector PMI too was at 60.2. It's come back to 59.7. The US on that one is back in the mid-50s for that one. So Europe's doing better on these sorts of leading indicators now. Consumer confidence came back a little to minus 5.3 from minus 4.4, but not dramatic. It was about what was expected. This week in Europe, we have business and consumer confidence survey still holding up very strongly. For the month of August, probably going to be about 117.9. It was 119, which is a very strong reading the month before. We've also got the August preliminary CPI, and this is something that we're watching everywhere now is inflation numbers. Going to be a real jump. You've had the annual CPI rate in Europe, which has hovered around the 2-ish percent mark now for quite a number of months. It was 2.2%, the highest reading we'd seen so far in this current lift in inflation going back to July. That's expected to move up to 2.8% year on year. One of these signs that inflation is lifting. We'll also get producer prices out of Europe coming out on Thursday. And these were very high going back to June. They're up 10.2% year on year. They're expected to lift to 10.9% year on year. So factory gate prices just about everywhere are running very, very high at the moment. And so this so-called temporary inflation that we're all experiencing, and which every central banker is saying, oh, no, this is all temporary, it'll come out of the system. Well, it ain't coming out of the system anytime soon. With these sorts of numbers in the pipeline, and there is a genuine risk that inflation could run up miles higher than anybody's anticipating at present. So it is an escalating risk. And it's an escalating risk because every central bank is holding interest rates down at absolute crisis levels that would normally be consistent with extreme deflation, not fast rising inflation. And so, you know, this is one of the conundrums that we're going to have to deal with as we go a bit further down the track. At the moment, obviously bond markets are giving central bankers the benefit of the doubt and continuing to hold bond yields down pretty well. But we are entering a period of risk, and so just watching all these inflation numbers as they come through. Another number to watch in the US, in Europe, you know, just signs that their economy is going fine. We've got the July unemployment rate coming out. It'll come down to 7.6, we think, from 7.7. And we also got retail sales, which have been doing better in Europe than just about anywhere else around the world through their summer where they've opened up. And so they're expected to lift at least another 0.2% after being up 1.5% the month before. So broadly speaking, watching things carefully this week, an awful lot of data coming out of Australia. The economy is doing absolutely fine, but they are very much supported by policy. And for the time being, you know, the central bankers are trying to put out a story that doesn't look all that consistent with what's going on, particularly on the inflation front.